Well, I'm delighted to have on the line the legendary Dick Van Dyke, and we'll say a very good afternoon to you, Dick. How are you?
Just fine, thank you, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great. It certainly is, and thank you for coming on. Now, before we talk about the book, Keep Moving, and it's a fantastic book, by the way, just wanted to talk a little bit about your career and your life. And as I've been reading up on you, Dick, and doing a bit of research, I realized that you didn't really come from a musical family, really.
No, I didn't. No, I actually started a musical family.
And so your parents, was your dad a salesman or something like that?
Yes, he was. He had, in his youth, had been a saxophone player in a jazz band, I guess. And I think my birth ruined that career. But he loved to play the saxophone, but that was about it for music.
And so where did music come in for you then? What was the first taste for you?
During the World War II, everybody got drafted. So at 16, I got a job as a disc jockey at our local station and began playing records and music. And I got a little bored with the current pop music and kind of graduated into jazz and then became a kind of a Bach aficionado.
Brilliant.
And I've loved music ever since. Singing and dancing is something I did for fun. I never in my life expected to do it professionally.
And did you actually go to war? Were you part of that?
Yes, I did. I was probably the worst soldier who ever entered the military. I went into the Air Force, presumably for pilot training, and then it was rather late in 1944, and the war winded down, and they just botched that program. So I went into entertainment.
And so, was it back to the radio show for a while?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I went back to my hometown for a little while. And then a buddy of mine and I came out in his old Chevy to California. Now, it was 1947, I think.
Wow.
Just more or less as a lark. We were going to go home and do something serious with our lives. One thing led to another, and I never got out of show business, and I couldn't be happier about it.
it's strange, Dick, but you're almost part of everybody's lives. It must be kind of strange for you, but you've probably never known anything else. So, but you're part of our childhood. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was so much part of my childhood, and I don't want to make you feel old, but, you know, I'm 40 years old, and that was part of my childhood. But so where did the acting come in, and, you know, where was the big break for you?
I wasn't a person with a lot of drive, but I had kids, so I had to beat the bushes for work. And I ended up doing a game show in New York, which was, I was no good and it was no good. And I began to go out and audition for Broadway shows, almost anything. And I got a few callbacks and ended up in a variety show doing little singing and dances, which absolutely surprised me to death. And one thing led to another. I got in Bye Bye Birdie, which was a hit. And just things went from there. It was just amazing. I had no plan, was not headed in that direction. So sometimes playing it by ear and leaving yourself open to other doors is a good idea.
What was the feeling like for you, you know, being a performer? What did it do to you? Was it kind of a bit of an addiction to get back up there and to entertain people?
Yes, there was something about doing a musical, which I never had. Singing and dancing, it was just the most invigorating and satisfying thing to perform. And I really do enjoy it. I love to make people laugh and make them feel good. And I'm still doing it. I have a quartet, and we sing and dance all over the place.
I've seen it, and it's great. It really is. And just wanted to talk to you, of course, about probably, I don't know, maybe two of the most iconic films of all time, Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Did you have any inkling as to how big, and how bigger than anything else that's ever gone before, really, how big those films were going to be?
Well, we all had a special feeling about Mary Poppins. There was something about that. Every morning we came to work, we felt something very special was happening. There was a great spirit about it, and the music was so great. It's just we kind of knew that was going to be good. Chitty was a surprise. It did not get very good reviews when it opened. It was kind of a run-of-the-mill musical, but just kids liked it, and so it's really been around for a long time.
It is, and it seems to be ageless as well. You can watch a clip today, and with the wonders of YouTube, of course, and I'm showing it to my four-year-old, and she's loving it, and, you know, and it's just timeless, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really is. To get letters from 8-year-olds at my age is just really satisfying. I feel like I contributed something.
Now, I've got to ask you, because I am obviously British, you know what I'm going to ask you next, don't you?
Of course.
What about the Cockney accent? Because I tell you, my wife, she is almost Spanish. She's lived in Spain all her life. And she said, well, she grew up thinking that's how all Cockneys sounded. So she had no problem with it at all. And she was quite amazed when she heard people saying, oh, you know, the accent and, you know, whatever.
God. There was a tweet on television. I think it was Judi Dench and Jeremy Irons and a couple of other British actors were asked who did the worst British accent in the history of cinema. And I won, of course, hands down. So I did. It always puzzled me that, of course, I was working so hard on the singing and dancing, but I was working with an entire cast of British. And not one person ever said, you know, you really ought to work on that accent.
I don't think it is as bad as some people make it. It's almost become legendary now, and it's almost people getting on the bandwagon a little bit with it. But am I right in saying that it was actually an Irishman that taught you to do the Cockney accent?
That's right, Pat O'Malley. A lot of people over here think that what I did was a real Cockney accent. They think I was the real McCoy.
Well, I lived in California for 3 months, and they all expect me to talk like you, so... And so let's go to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, of course. That was a film that really, for me as a young boy with the car and everything, that was the one. And so I believe that was, you know, see, you've blown my conceptions now, because my preconceptions were that it's a very English film, filmed in England.
Yes, all in. Some of it was filmed actually in France. We ran out of sunshine in England, and Chitty's driving through what really are vineyards. It's supposed to be England, but they're French vineyards.
There's not many vineyards in England, that's for sure.
No, that took over a year to shoot, but what an experience it was.
And like you say, that became a classic, but not straight away then.
Well, I beg your pardon?
That became a classic film, but it wasn't received by everybody straight away.
The critics didn't like it at all, but families and kids just ate it up. One thing that surprised me, they tell me, adults who saw it as children, that the child catcher just scared the pants off them. And it never occurred to me that he would be that frightening.
No, and in fact, a friend of mine, her child watches it, and I think she's about 8 or 9 years of age, and she loves the film, but it's always really scared at that moment. So I suppose there's a legacy there. That's for sure.
Evidently, I didn't realize it would be so spooky. Going back and looking at it now, I realize he is scary.
Do you find, Dick, that, and I find this as well when I'm interviewing people, that the critics will maybe pan something and maybe slate a program or a show on Broadway or somewhere, and actually, you know what, the public don't agree. The public are the ones really that the companies are trying to reach out to and make the money from, of course, ultimately. But the critics sometimes can miss it by a country mile.
Oh, yeah. I remember when West Side Story opened, the critics didn't like it. I guess it was too much of a change for them, but it got pretty bad reviews.
Mm.
You often think back to the 30s and Norman Rockwell was just considered a magazine illustrator, and Laurel and Hardy were a B-movie team. Yeah. And today there's a lot of respect for those people.
Were they the influence for you? Because I look at the Dick Van Dyke Show and some of the stunts you do on there.
Oh,
and
of course, absolutely. I stole liberally from them.
And Charlie Chaplin, of course, Laurel and Hardy. It's still today. I mean, that's timeless comedy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I still can watch it and laugh.
What do you think is the key, then, to the longevity of Mary Poppins and the Dick Van Dyke Show and all that you've really been involved with? Why do you feel that there's such a need for it today? Why are we still watching it in our droves?
Well, there isn't much around that's very, very helpful, I don't think. There's nothing very inspirational, nothing light, and very cheerful. Everything's gone rather dark. there was a stage version of Mary Poppins. I don't know if you ever saw it.
I didn't know.
It was the family was dysfunctional, and another nanny dressed in black came in and runs Mary Poppins out. It's dark, and I was so surprised that that good message that the original had just wasn't there. I can't imagine why they did that.
It's very strange, isn't it, how people play around with. It's almost, you know, I feel quite adamant that there's certain things you shouldn't play around with, and Mary Poppins is one of them.
Yes, I think so. They're planning a sequel over at Disney, and I have some misgivings about that.
And have they contacted you yet?
No, supposedly it's a story about the kids growing into their 20s. And, of course, they won't have the Sherman Brothers to write the score. They won't have any Julie Andrews and no Walt Disney. So I said, just to my agent, just tell them Bert's dead.
He's gone. the Dick Van Dyke Show, of course, that was living in the UK. We didn't really get to watch that and didn't know about it. I certainly didn't know about it so much, but I'm watching clips. It's hard to believe just how popular it was at the time. It's, you know, just lots of people watching it.
Yes, yeah, the ratings were always good. Well, Carl Reiner was such a good writer. He wrote comedy that was credible, that was believable. He didn't go very far out in the limb. And he wrote good dialogue. Yeah, that show was right up at number one for 5 years.
Yeah, and people just seem to lap it. It seemed to be in an era where lots of famous people were having their own shows, like, you know, the Frank Sinatra show and the Perry Como show, and then later on, of course. And it seemed lots of people were doing that. And why do you feel that was as popular as it was? What was the key for you?
I think it was truly funny.
Yeah.
People who have just discovered it, younger people, say they belly laugh, and they can't belly laugh at any of the other sitcoms currently on the air. And I agree with them. There's something that I don't get about modern-day comedy.
Yeah. It's strange because in the UK, we're watching all our old sitcoms. They come round and round again, and we watch them all again because there's something about that humour. A lot of it was quite clean, and it was family entertainment. You could sit with the family and watch it, and it was just great to watch.
Monty Python, as far as I'm concerned, is the funniest thing ever done.
Yeah, I
agree. Those guys absolutely killed me.
They're absolutely brilliant, aren't they? Now, also, I want to ask you about A Night in the Museum as well, because that was one of the more recent films you've been involved with, and a great family classic again.
Yes, they had me in the first one, and then Mickey Rooney and I were actually in a scene in the second one, and we ended up on the cutting room floor.
I was told about that, yeah. If you get a DVD, apparently, Dick, if you get the DVD, you're in the extras.
That's right. So, I like Ben Stiller and the fact that he does family entertainment, so whenever he calls, I show up.
I was going to say, are the folks around today that you think, there's something about them that's got a bit of the old-style comedy about them that they're doing quite well, or would you kind of not really be into a lot of the modern stuff?
Some of it, of course, the shows are only 20 minutes now.
Yeah.
They used to be almost 28 minutes, so they have to go pretty fast. But there's an awful lot of canned laughter at things that don't strike me funny. But I will just beg off because of my age and my generation that I don't get it.
Yeah, well, I'm 40, and I listen to a lot of old music. I like the old stuff, and my wife will say to me, you're born in the wrong era. But I watch some stuff, and I think there's just no need for the language or the rudeness in there. It's just maybe I'm a bit of a prude, but I just don't see the need.
What was the old show Spike Milligan was on?
Oh, the Goonies was it?
Yes.
The Gooners, yeah.
I still have some tapes of that old show.
Now, did you get Morecambe and Wise over there?
Oh, yes, I think so.
They were great. They were great.
Yes.
And again, they're still watched a lot on the TV today. At Christmas time, we were all watching it on the BBC. Also, I want to ask you about your new book, of course. Before we do that, there's a program that I used to watch, and I really feel privileged talking to you, because every lunchtime I used to come home and I'd watch Diagnosis Murder on the television, and that was such a big show as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it ran, as a matter of fact, about 10 years. I tried to keep it family-oriented and light, and there was a certain audience that really liked it. It ran for, as a matter of fact, it was still in the... I carried nepotism to its ultimate by having everybody in my family on.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah. And like that as well, I've got a kind of a bit of theory about this. Also watching the likes of Murder, She Wrote, I reckon yes. It was Jessica Fletcher that was murdering people.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if you had any insight on that.
Well, what remarkable about her is, I think she's my age and she's still performing on Broadway.
Oh, yeah, she's fantastic, isn't she? Yeah.
I got to get her in my book.
Definitely. I've got to get her on the show. Right. The book Keep Moving. Dick, can we give your age away live on the radio?
Oh, yeah, I'm 90.
90 years old.
I turned 90.
90 years young. Yeah.
In December, yeah, and I'm still singing and dancing.
So,
and I have all the infirmities commensurate with my age, so it's not that.
So what's the secret for you then, Dick, when it comes to this kind of... You just seem to be dancing around, singing still, and you were saying, you know, you don't really have to be a singer to be... I know you can sing, but you don't have to be a singer to sing and dance and enjoy yourself.
Absolutely not. I tell people you cannot sing and be in a bad mood at the same time. Not possible.
Yeah. Well, depending on what song you're singing, of course, but if it's a good song, yeah. reaching this age, you said that you got a few ailments and so on, and you're bound to have that, but what is the secret? Is that what the book's about?
When the publisher came to me, I said, well, that's a very thin volume. It's just keep moving, which is really the secret. But I sat down and found out I had a lot more pages of things to say than I thought. I keep reiterating all the way through the book, don't start going down the steps sideways, because that's the beginning of the end.
Oh, right, because it's like your hips.
Oh, your hips and the knees and everything go.
Right, because I sometimes do walk down the steps sideways. I'm 40 now, so I've got to be careful.
Yes.
So your hips go and your knees go. Right.
Exactly. And it begins to throw the spine off, too.
Wow. What other tips have you got then for us, Dick, on, you know, because I'm not there yet, but I will be. And I feel sometimes I look at you on the television and I think to myself, how come he looks slimmer than me? He seems to be more energetic than me. He's got more hair than me.
Well, never too early to start. You have to start, you know, doing something.
Yeah.
I love to dance.
Oh, that's my problem, you see. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, dancing. Whenever I hear a good beat in the grocery store, I dance. People here are used to me dancing around in the local stores. But I just keep moving is really the answer.
That's amazing, because I can imagine, you know, you're going out shopping to get a bit of veg and maybe some potatoes, and you say to your wife, is that Dick Van Dyke dancing in the vegetable section over there?
I keep ending up on somebody's tweet.
Yeah,
but maybe I can encourage people to get out and move a little more.
Now, you still go to the gym, is that right? You're in the gymnasium a lot.
Yeah, I go every morning, have my coffee, and then go before I talk myself out of it, which I will.
That sounds like me. I'm very good at talking myself out of doing any exercise. So the gymnasium every morning, is that the routine? Is that every single morning?
Yes, I do something, and when the weather is warmer, of course, I do get in the water.
Yeah.
Water exercise is so good, especially for people who are up in years, because there's no impact, no resistance. It's very good for you.
What about your attitude then, Dick, when it comes to, you know, waking up in the morning, another day on planet Earth? What's your attitude towards life?
Well, I think it's inborn. I wake up always on the right side of the bed. I'm looking forward to the day. I had four kids, two of them were like me, and two of them were grumpy when they got up in the morning. I think it's an inborn thing.
So you've either got it or you haven't, yeah.
Yeah.
And now also, I also will add that you've got a younger wife, and she must keep you quite young.
I'm sorry?
You've got a younger wife, and she must keep you kind of sprightly.
Oh, she's very good for me. She's just an angel. She also sings and dances, so there's a lot of that going around the house. And she keeps me young. I have my quartet with four guys in their 40s. So I think it's it's kind of a, the idea of reinventing oneself at a certain age. If you retire, you don't want to just sit around. So think of things you can do that you enjoy.
Not that I'm expecting you to go anywhere in the not too distant future, but as you look back on your life, what are you grateful for?
Oh my God, I think the luck I've had. I've just stumbled into good things to do. Since my kids were, when my kids were young, I decided I wasn't going to do anything they couldn't see. And so I had to turn down an awful lot of work. But I have had a good career of doing what I like to do and what I'm proud of. And I just thank God for that.
Yeah. So did you feel, I mean, that, to me, that's another source of happiness, you know, knowing when to stop working and be with your family and to just have some quality time with them, because so, you hear so many performers who say, you know, I've had a great career, but I miss my children growing up.
Oh, that's so bad. They say a man on his deathbed never says, I wish I'd spent more time at the office.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. And so to you, that's really important.
Oh, yeah. My eldest son just turned 65, and I said, my God, you can't be 65. I'm 65. To have kids, you know, who are also aging and turning gray is shocking.
Like, see, when I was going back to like the 80s, 70s, and 80s, when I was a young child, my grandma was 64 years of age,
yes.
And she dressed old. She had a perm hair. She had old-style clothes on, and she seemed like an old person. And now 65 is young, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, my son just took off and did a bicycle trip through the Andes Mountains, the whole length of Chile.
Wow.
At 65. So at least my kids take my advice. Yeah, he's bound to get all those things in before he's too old to do them.
Do you get frustrated, Dick, when you look around and see older people who are really kind of, I don't know, just happy to kind of sit back and let life, you know, drift away in some respects, you know, not really take it by the horns?
I think you're right. They throw in the towel.
Yeah.
Another thing is that so many of the people never change their minds or opinions about anything throughout their entire lives. They're not open to new information or changing, and I think that breeds, you know, serpents of the mind. It's like water that's not flowing.
Yeah.
It gets stagnant. People will not be open-minded. And I think that contributes to aging.
Yeah, so just stay open-minded, whatever age you are. And just final question, then, Dick, I wanted to ask you, is there any role in any TV series, musical, that, you know, you would say, I would love to do that, or are you just happy what you've done so far?
Well, if I could have had any part in the history of movies, I would have been the Scarecrow in Wizard of Oz. I fit that part, and I wish I could have done it.
Yeah, you would have done really well in that, that's for sure, definitely.
Yeah, I would have been a perfect Scarecrow.
Well, Dick Van Dyke, it's been an absolute joy to have you on Talk Radio Europe here in Spain. And do you ever come over to Spain? Have you been here much?
I've never been to Spain.
Well, now's the time, you know, you're open-minded. Come over, we'll buy you a glass of sangria and some paella. And
What city are you in?
We're in Marbella on the south coast of Spain.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
If I visit, I'll give you a ring.
They would love you here. Dick, thank you for interviewing us here on TRE.
I enjoyed it.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.